And welcome back. 9/11 triggered a series of events that have directly altered history in many parts of the world since. This country went to war in Iraq and Afghanistan. There have been subsequent terrorist attacks and threats and seismic shifts in American policy and turmoil in governance in the Middle East. It has provided educators on many levels with vivid examples to teach history within a modern context. That's our subject now, how to teach 9/11 and its importance beyond the attack itself, and how can it be taught effectively to various age groups. Joining me in studio are Dr. Marvin Berkowitz, the McDonald Professor of Character Education and co-director of the Center for Character and Citizenship at the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Stephanie Downs is a fourth-grade teacher at Premier Charter School in South St. Louis. A little later, we'll chat with two other teachers who use 9/11 as a teaching opportunity. Thank you, folks, both very much for being with us in studio. Nice to see you again, Marvin. And Stephanie, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Great to be here, Dan.
Marvin, let me begin with you. How do you think that our character as individuals and as a country was shaped by 9/11?
Oh, I'm not sure that 9/11 changed individuals' character in a prolonged way. Certainly as a nation, if a nation can have character, because a nation's not a living being, it certainly made us more aware of threats, more cautious. There was, at the very beginning of it, a sense of, and this happened after World War II, this holier-than-thou notion that comes up, which I don't really like. I do so much international work, and I'm really resistant to running around, beating our chests and saying we're better than everybody else. But there was a piece of that in there. But I don't know if that stuff sustains.
That, I guess, is a big question, trying to analyze that. But the reason I asked that question about national character is it seems to me there was a great surge of patriotism. Mm-hmm. And if you heard the first segment of our program today, the gentleman who was on the phone, Paul, was talking about his intense patriotism. He could feel it. It was palpable.
You know, it's an interesting experience. Shortly after 9/11, I got a call from a colleague of mine, a pretty distinguished guy who runs a major program across the U.S., saying, Marvin, I want you to sign on because we want to write this statement about, you know, America's character and how it showed in the response, you know, particularly right on site as people were being heroic and putting themselves at risk to save others. And I said, I'm not doing it. He said, why wouldn't you do it? I said, because I don't think that we can say that it wouldn't have happened that way in other countries. Mm-hmm. And so many of those people who are in there dying or putting themselves at risk weren't Americans. Mm-hmm. I grew up in New York. New York is populated by people from all over the world. And I just didn't think it was an appropriate statement.
I've forgotten the number, but there were a large number of Muslims in that building as well, needless to say. Stephanie, I'll come to you, but I want to ask you what you remember about 9/11. You're not that old, but you're old enough to remember it, I'm sure.
Right. So when 9/11 happened, I was in eighth grade, and I was actually appropriately in a history class. And I remember them turning on the TVs and kind of showing the aftermath of what was going on. And at the time, the towers hadn't collapsed. And so I kind of remember that experience and the seeing how shaken my teacher was, because at the time I couldn't really grasp the magnitude of it. But, you know, then it was the question of, well, what should we tell them and what should we not? They made them turn off the TVs. And it was just kind of interesting seeing everybody's response, because I was really looking to the adults that were around to kind of see how I should respond at the time.
And Marvin, where were you and what were you doing?
I was actually at a character education training that Character Plus was running. I think we were out at on Fifi Road at the Parkway School District Training Center. And we were in the middle of this, and I remember Jerry Corley, who was running it, came out and said, this is what's happening, and we have to make a decision as to what to do. And as for everybody else, it was hard to first wrap your head around what was actually going on.
But you're a New Yorker.
Yep.
So that had special significance
for
you.
Sure did. I know people who were there. I know people who live near there. And, you know, it had a lot of meaning because it was happening in the city where I grew up.
Our subject today is really, how do you teach 9/11? And Stephanie, I'll come back to you. You said you were in the eighth grade, and you were trying to absorb what was going on, but now you're teaching fourth graders.
Yes.
How do you approach it with fourth graders?
With fourth graders, I think the important thing is, I think the younger the kid is, the more personal it has to be. So you have to teach them what it meant to people and what it meant to families, because that's something they can understand. If it's too big, then it's too hard for them to understand. So we go over a general idea of, you know, what were the events of that day and what happened. And then we talk about it more on a personal level. And then we also focus a lot on the first responders and the people who went in afterwards. And we really try to teach the empathy standpoint of it, where, you know, people had to really put themselves at risk in certain situations, and they had to go in there and give their time and their energy and really help the effort.
You show video.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough video.
I show small videos, or I show like the animated version of a video. Tomorrow I'm going to be showing a segment that Discovery Education put out, and it's just a very brief video that kind of talks about the aftermath and like people going, you know, the patriotism that came up afterwards and the pride that people showed and how people kind of rallied together at that time, because that was something that was really important to that event.
This has to be a real challenge for you to present it in a way, because some of that video and some of the discussion and some of the facts of the case can be very disturbing for young people.
Mm-hmm. We actually started the conversation this morning, and I kind of talked to my kids about a little bit of a brief overview of the events, and then, you know, it brings up questions with kids that are hard, that are, you know, there are questions that even adults struggle with, like, why would someone do this? That question comes up, you know, time and time again. So the ultimate answer is, I don't know. I don't know why someone would do this, and I don't know what would, you know, convince them to do this. But I know that afterwards, there's a lot of good that came out of it, too. So that's the part we have to focus on.
Marvin, what do you make of this and having this kind of a discussion with people so young?
I think it's an incredibly tricky thing to do. And I think Stephanie's doing a good job of you know, walking a rather treacherous path with this one. I think one of the things you have to ask yourself is, what is your purpose in putting this into the classrooms? Because you can have different purposes. It might be that you want children to know the facts of history. It's an important event in history. I want them to know facts. Then you have to figure out a way for the kids, developmentally appropriately, that I can present those facts in a way that they can understand, and you know, and is stimulating and helpful and informative to them. But your purpose might be because you want to convince them of a certain value message. Well, that's a different agenda. Or it might be that you want them to learn to struggle to think critically about complex moral and social events. Each of those require different ways of doing it. So I would encourage all educators to ask themselves deeply, what really is driving my train here? What's the reason that I want to do this? And now I need to think about what's the best path to that outcome. I mean, so that's one of the really challenging pieces. The other really big challenge for me is something that's an age-old issue with kids. To what degree do you expose them to the world almost as an inoculation to prepare them for the dangers that are out there and so on? And to what degree do you say these kids are young and we don't want to taint them at this young age and make them afraid? Some of the very old research that was done early on the effects of media, in those cases it was TV, violence in TV in the early years on kids, had something they called the mean scary world phenomenon, because there was a question on this questionnaire saying, do you think the world is a mean and scary place? And the kids who watch more TV, because there was more violence, thought the world was meaner and scarier. And so in that way, you were making kids fearful of the world. And you could counter-argue that, in fact, there are things to be fearful of. But it's really, really treacherous and tricky thing to figure out, what doses do we expose them to these pathogens in the world, and to what degree is too much, and we're breaking kids.
Yeah. Stephanie, of course the world is a scary place, and even fourth graders know that because they watch television and they play sometimes scary video games. I'm just wondering how that, or if you feel or sense that familiarity with this scary place world affects how they respond to your teaching about 9/11.
I think it depends on how you approach it. So you know, like I said, we started the conversation this morning in the classroom, and I think that it shapes who they are to some degree, but I think that as long as you're kind of guiding the discussion, then they'll kind of go in the direction that you're taking it.
Marvin talked about purpose and having a reason to do this. What is your purpose and your reason?
My purpose is to bring out those character traits that we really want to instill in our kids. So empathy, bravery, courage, things like that. That's the main focus for me.
Should that work, Marvin?
It could. It certainly can. But you could also say they don't need something as horrific as 9/11 to do that. You can develop those character traits in other ways. So then you have to do cost balance analysis. I mean, is there a safer, less toxic way to bring out those character traits? If there is, you know, so you really have to do that kind of calculation. The other thing that's really critical for educators to do is to check on comprehension. Because I remember some of the stories that came out right after 9/11 of the way young children were completely misconstruing. I mean, one teacher said a child came in and they said, you know, because they wanted the kids, when it really happened, you had to deal with it. It was an elephant in the room. You couldn't ignore it. So they asked the kids, who knows what happened? And I remember one child said, bad people got an airplane and they flew it to a building and they knocked it down, and then they flew another airplane into another building and they knocked it down, and then they did it again, and then they did it again, and then they did it again, because he was watching the repeat. And but his understanding was that there were 30 or 40 attacks, not two attacks. So as we expose kids to some of these things, we really need to check with how are they making meaning of it. Kids are meaning-making organisms. They make sense of the world in ways that are sometimes unpredictable.
Stephanie, in drawing up lesson plans for something like this, do you have to work with counselors at school or administrators at school so that everybody's in sync with what you're doing?
I think that at the school that I work at, we have, you know, a lot of faith in our teachers to make those decisions for themselves and for the kids that they're working with, because some groups can handle it and some groups can't. And I think that we're really fortunate in that they trust us to make that decision based on our own kids and our own classes.
How long have you been doing this for the 9/11 anniversary?
Mm-hmm. 4 years.
4 years. And overall, the experience has been what?
It's been really positive. I think the kids are... they're at the point now where they are kind of ready for some of the information and they're ready to kind of start hearing that conversation. It's been a really positive experience.
Any complaints from the home front?
Nope, not yet.
Okay. I want to go. We've talked about fourth graders. Let's move along now. Eighth graders were being born around the time of 9/11 2001. Obviously, they have no recollection of the event, but have grown up in its aftermath. James Mueller is an eighth grade teacher at Fox Middle School. And I spoke with him earlier this morning and wondered how he brings them into the discussion.
I like to start off by showing them a video that kind of goes over some of the events, has interviews some of the family members. And I first like to kind of give them that warning that this is a serious topic that is going to probably bring out some emotions in some of them. And I kind of discuss some of the connections to American history and to the world that they live in.
How do they react to the video?
I have had some students actually break down in tears, and that's one of the reasons why I like to give that warning to begin with. And I like to set from the beginning of the year a safe classroom environment where they can feel free to express their emotions in a no-judgment zone. And I do have those emotional reactions. Some are sad, some are angry. But we kind of talk it out together, and we talk about the kind of heroism that was taking place that day, and I use it as a teaching moment to talk about service.
Do you ever have the sense that that video obviously is horrific, so much of it, that they have become desensitized to this sort of thing in any way?
You know what? If you look at the reactions on their faces, I don't think they're desensitized. You know, there's some videos you show in a classroom where students put their heads down or that they can ignore. This is not a video that they can ignore. And this is a video that I would say almost every student I've ever shown has a reaction to it. So I wouldn't say they're desensitized.
But of course, all of the kids in the eighth grade probably weren't even born or were just born about the time of 9/11 2001.
Yes, I'm starting to come to the point in my career where these students were either born right around that time or after it. And as times went on, when I first started teaching 9 years ago, kids had pretty vivid memories of the day. And now they have almost no memory and very little background knowledge. of the events. And so it's become, in some sense, more of a challenge. In other senses, though, it's when you're the first person to cover something with young people, they don't have as many misconceptions as I would say they maybe used to.
How do you relate it to other history and current events?
Oh, well, that's, you know, if I compare it to some of the events as far as war and methodology of war, terrorism as it's been used throughout history, and current events, it's, you know, very timely. The events that are going on this week in Iraq and Syria, most of these kids, I actually was discussing this with one of my classes earlier this morning, and most of these kids have either family members or friends, people they know, who have served in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. So connecting it to their own life is usually not at all a challenge. And being able to connect that to history really kind of brings history alive for these kids.
Typically, James, what kind of questions are they asking about any of this?
Well, they ask me questions about who's responsible. Many times they don't know. Many times they confuse people like Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. And so kind of clarifying those details for them without that background knowledge that they just don't have is important. And those are usually the types of questions that they ask. Who's responsible and how it relates to some of the things that are going on today.
And how does it affect you as you go over this year after year? You did live through it, of course.
Yes, I was in college at the time, and I have watched this video. I've watched this video for 9 years now, and I still have an emotional reaction, and I still sometimes tear up as I listen to the family members of the victims. And that's okay, and that kind of shows the kids, I think, that it's okay to have that emotional reaction.
That's James Mueller, an eighth-grade teacher at Fox Middle School. Stephanie, of course, you teach fourth graders. He has eighth graders. He can go a little more deeply into the weeds, can he not, with regard to associating with current events. What do you make of what he said?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what he said is really important, that these kids don't really have a grasp for it yet, and so kind of giving them some context for it is really important. But yeah, he definitely can get a lot more specific and do a lot more of the history lesson component of it. For us, it's more of a, you know, their homework for tonight is to go home and ask their parents where they were, you know, on 9/11 so that they have that personal connection to it, too.
Right. So. Marvin, your thoughts about what you just heard and how it's approached amongst eighth graders?
Well, I think one of the things he said really is generic and critical. And I know Stephanie does this well as. And he said at the beginning of the year, we create a safe classroom environment and that we create a, you know, a no put down zone. Or I forget the exact phrase he used. But if you're going to deal with emotionally charged issues, if you're going to deal with challenging issues, issues that can provoke reactions in kids that may be strong and long term, then you need to do it in a culture that's supportive and appropriate of that. And this is basically character education that we do all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, teachers think character education is teaching about certain values, but it's not. It's creating a kind of climate and culture in a school and a classroom, modeling it, creating a safe space where kids know their voices matter, where they know that they have caring relationships, where they know that they're safe. Then you're better positioned to do this. I wouldn't want somebody covering this kind of material in a classroom where the kids don't feel safe, the teacher's a bully, the teacher's cold, the kids are in little cliques and they put each other down, they roll their eyes and groan when the unpopular person speaks or something. I would rather they stayed away from these topics in contexts like that.
What about character development with regard to emphasizing and pointing out the heroics of that day, the first responders who went in when everyone else was running out, a phrase we've heard so many times.
I mean, that's fine. I mean, it sounds like that's partly Stephanie's goal, is to focus on the character strengths, the character traits. And you can do that by telling, you know, stories of heroism. There are curricula out there. The Giraffe Project is a great project that has amassed about 1,000 vignettes of giraffes, people who stick their necks out for others, children, adults, people around the world through history, contemporary. So there are curricula out there in which you can look at people who do that. 9/11 is another opportunity to look at those people. I would just encourage people to be really careful again, about purpose, but also about not over sanitizing or propagandizing this, because there, you know, there were, people did good things, people did bad things. I mean, we just went to the Ferguson incident and you had people looting. That doesn't mean everybody in Ferguson's bad. Some people did that. And there are people who showed great strengths in Ferguson and did wonderful things. And but to see all of it is important. But again, for the 9 and 10-year-olds that Stephanie's got, it's a different bar than for the, you know, 13, 14-year-olds that James Mueller has over at Fox Middle School.
Stephanie, do you find that the kids, your kids, connect with the heroics of the story?
I think they do. I mean, I think it depends on what all they know and what how you're teaching it. But, yeah, I think they can grasp that.
Did you ever consider not teaching this?
I think that's a question that every educator kind of deals with. But I think just because we don't teach it doesn't mean they don't hear about it. And so if we're not addressing it in the classroom, then we're missing the mark.
And best to have that kind of an environment, Marvin, I would think, to have a controlled environment, so to speak.
Yeah. As long as it's a healthy, controlled environment.
Well, of course. Of course. I have to take a break. Let's do that now. We're talking about teaching 9/11 as we prepare to observe tomorrow's anniversary of the 9/11 attacks in 2001. My guests in studio, Marvin Berkowitz, co-director of the Center for Character and Citizenship at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. And Stephanie Downs is with us. She is a fourth grade teacher at Premier Charter School. Back to continue the conversation. As time allows, we'll take your comments as well at 382-8255, but let's do that after the break. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We will be continuing our conversation on how to teach 9/11 with my guests in studio, Stephanie Downs, a fourth grade teacher at Premier Charter School here in St. Louis, and with Marvin Berkowitz, an educator at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. But before we continue that conversation, these are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Protesters are planning to block a portion of Interstate 70 near Ferguson this afternoon as part of their call for a special prosecutor to take over the investigation into the police shooting of Michael Brown. Missouri lawmakers were expected today to override a veto of legislation requiring a 72-hour waiting period for abortions, one of the largest mandatory delays in the nation. They are also considering whether to override Governor Jay Nixon's vetoes of millions of dollars of spending for education, public safety, and other initiatives. And backers of an amendment that would tighten tenure for Missouri teachers say they are not going to continue campaigning for passage of that measure on the November ballot. The group of supporters known as Teach Great say they need more time to educate Missourians on the benefits of limiting teacher contracts and changing the rules on how teachers may be hired, fired, and retained. You can learn more about these and other stories this afternoon on St. Louis Public Radio and throughout the day at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Stephanie Downs and Marvin Berkowitz. Well, I'd like to play another clip now from another educator, teacher. This would be a somewhat older group. Annie Wayland is a social studies teacher at Parkway West High School in Baldwin. 9/11 has provided her and fellow teachers with a teaching opportunity on several levels. And I asked Annie Wayland, how do you teach 9/11?
We teach it in, I guess, two different directions. One way is probably a remembering and reflecting approach. With the digital archives, you know, memorials, personal accounts and stories. And then we teach it another way towards the educational approach of war on terrorism, foreign policy, and then post 9/11 policies. So two different kind of approaches, I think, is probably the most common way that we approach it at our schools.
Do you just teach it on 9/11 or is this something that is ongoing through a portion of the school year?
It's absolutely ongoing. I think that most teachers are constantly coming back to the topic in a number of different ways. Most students are not familiar with major incidents that have happened to them that are kind of life-changing moments. You know, there's moments that every generation has that kind of stand out that change generations. And this particular group of children probably haven't had that. They haven't had a JFK assassination or a Challenger explosion or a 9/11. And so for them, this is something that's monumental that we have to kind of explain to them and try to connect for them. And so I think that's a little bit different for them. So we try to connect based on our content and keep coming back to that information. So, you know, their freshman year, they're learning U.S. history. So so we can constantly keep coming back to different topics and make it relevant. You know, sophomore year, they're learning world history, so we could talk about foreign policy. And their junior year, they're learning government, so we could always talk about different policies that were created right after 9/11 as well.
Do they seem to get it at that age, the influence that 9/11 has had on subsequent history?
Yeah, I do think they get it. You know, I think kids are very aware of what's going on, especially as we keep coming back to that. I think kids are a little bit more in touch with some events that are in history today. Sometimes, like I said, the constant awareness of it and the social media and the aspect of the generation of internet and technology allows them to be aware of everything that's kind of going on. And certainly the textbooks and the teachers and kind of talking about the information in their classroom certainly allows them to kind of be in touch with the content a little bit more often.
What kinds of questions do they ask?
I think a lot of it's just, like I said, the understanding of maybe why, what's going to happen as a result of that, has it happened before, different elements like that are some common questions. And I think, you know, that's when we start to connect some of those iconic moments throughout history that have kind of happened. A lot of times they kind of go back to the Pearl Harbor. That's another common connection that happens, days of infamy that have happened, you know, other iconic moments, you know, flag of Iwo Jima, you know, the Tiananmen Square, different things like that are going to be other moments where we keep connecting these big pictures that kids kind of connect throughout history as well.
You know, you talk about the various media available to you to use, digital and what have you. That is so graphic. I wonder if in any sense they have been desensitized through today's digital world to some of the images from 9/11.
I think that's possible, and I think that, you know, desensitization is certainly very possible for kids nowadays, and I think that's a growing problem that, you know, we face with history very often, and I think kind of, you know, trying to explain to people that these are real people, these are real stories, is certainly something that we have to continue to explain to students and to try to make them understand that every story, every person has a story, and every incident that's happened is very real. And, you know, we continue to kind of strive that these are real people, real incidences that have happened.
And what about the impact of all of this on you, going over this again and again?
It's difficult. It's hard, you know, because it brings you back to the moment where you were at when this happened. And I remember very vividly where I was. I was in college, actually, when this happened, and I remember the exact moment. And it kind of puts you back in that place and how you felt. And, you know, like I said, it was my iconic moment, and it changed me forever. And understanding where I was and the people that I was with and what was going on in my life, and it made me reevaluate everything too. And in, you know, the generation is very different in terms of how we approach different things. And, you know, I think that's something that we have to reevaluate. But it's also made me, you know, appreciate my country even more. You know, it's made me appreciate the American people, the soldiers, our military, and I think that's also grown in our teaching, and the people at our school at West have done an amazing job at showing that in their teaching and their education as well.
That's Annie Wayland, a social studies teacher at Parkway West High School in Baldwin. Stephanie, just interested, she mentioned it gave her an increased sense of patriotism. Have you found that has happened to you, perhaps?
Yeah, I think it has. I think that it was, you know, not as emphasized pre-9/11 in my generation. So it was, you know, it definitely changed the way, you know, seeing flags everywhere was something that, you know, I didn't really notice as much until after 9/11.
And Marvin, you see the evolution of the way this is being taught. We've started with the fourth grade, eighth grade, and now I used this expression before, but how Annie can really get into the weeds with mm-hmm. regard to what's going on now with the older group.
Sure, and that makes perfect sense. You want to sort of vertically articulate sure. your curriculum and do it in a way that's developmentally appropriate. And what Stephanie is doing with the fourth graders is the appropriate way to do it with fourth graders. And then we heard James doing it, you know, getting a bit more intense in terms of feelings and showing footage is into middle school. And now Annie's talking about really talking about deep curricular implications and so on and more abstract ideas. That's certainly the way to do something like this.
Stephanie, James talked about how he would tear up and as he's discussing mm-hmm. this. Has that ever been a problem for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely pulls on your heartstrings when you're yeah. talking about something as serious as this.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones. We have a couple of calls. We'll get in as time allows. We'll be joined by Tina calling from Maplewood. Tina, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had a couple of comments to make. I was teaching at the time. I was a music teacher, so I taught kindergarten through eighth grade. And I two observations of the students' reaction that really stuck with me. One was when the seventh graders came to class that day, they were angry because their teacher had decided to turn off the television and that they were too young to take in the information. And they resented that. They didn't feel like they were too young for that. And they wanted to be treated more maturely, I suppose. So there was that. And then another thing, a couple of days after 9/11, I asked my second graders, a second grade class, I played the song, and we sang and learned the song America the Beautiful. And I asked them to draw a picture of how that song made them feel. And I was expecting to see amber waves of grain and purple mountain majesties. And instead, I got pictures back of two country people at war with each other, pointing guns at each other and fighting each other. And that really struck me. Rather than telling them, you know, that that's not what the song was about or this isn't what I wanted, I gave them back their pictures and I said, okay, now I'd like you to turn your paper over to the other side. And, you know, we're going to talk about what do amber waves of grain look like? What do purple mountain majesties look like? Because I was trying to get them to appreciate the beauty of our country. And it struck me that these second graders drew pictures of people shooting each other with guns.
Dana, thank you so much.
I was wondering what the comments were about that.
Let me start with Stephanie. This kind of shows what a slippery slope it can be. Your thoughts about what you just heard?
It does. I mean, I think it depends on where the emphasis is. You know, obviously, those students that were in second grade then, we can't take away the fact that it happened. We can't, you know, take away the footage that they've seen. But with my kids, since they didn't go through it and they didn't experience, we kind of get to choose what parts of it that they get to see. And so it's just making sure that you have the correct exposure for the age group that you're working with.
Marvin?
Tina, like a lot of teachers, sounds like she's got a great heart and loves these kids. But she also had an agenda. And she came in there and she wanted to perhaps distract the kids from the horrors and get them to think about the wonderful things. And when you come in there with that agenda, you're basically trying to be a puppet master and making a reality that doesn't exist. And you really have to start with where the kids are. She discovered where the kids were. The kids were still grappling with the war horrors of this. And yet she decided to take a strategy was just turn. She literally said, turn the page. I mean, they can't turn the page. That's where they are now. And you have to deal with them where they are now.
Well-intentioned, obviously.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Have you ever used pictures as part of your...
I haven't, not for 9/11.
Yeah, right. Let's take one more call. As time gets away, I want to bring Dennis in. Dennis, go ahead, but it has to be quick.
Thank you very much. I'm a former teacher and still planned a history seminar. First of all, I want to compliment you. It's been a wonderful conversation. One reaction I have is that I think the secondary teachers have a lot to learn from the elementary teachers. You really do have to touch kids in the heart a little emotionally before you can get to the abstractions. So that's one starting point. I think it's important that we remember this is a historical moment. It's a turning point in history, or at least we should raise the question, is it a turning point in history? How does this relate to anything in the past, continuity and change? A wonderful film was being shown at Washington U last night called Divided We Fall on the impact of 9/11. On Muslim Americans, on Sikh Americans, and it's not a pretty story. This is a multidimensional story that still goes on. Appreciate the opportunity. Thank you very much.
Dennis, thank you so much for the call. Thoughts?
Well, I mean, that last piece is a really important one. It's human nature that we overgeneralize. The world's too complex to hold it all, and it's incredible complexity in our heads, so we generalize, and that's where stereotypes come from. So while we see that there are threats out there and there are enemies, now we start to stereotype and generalize, and it's all Muslims or all people from the Middle East or whatever way people make sense of this, which is we can understand the psychology of why people do that, but we shouldn't. We can't support it because it does great justice to injustice to others. And so that's a really important point there. And I agree with them wholeheartedly that secondary teachers can learn a lot from elementary school teachers. Some middle school principals have a choice between people who have a secondary license or an elementary license because they tend to overlap. And a lot of them want the elementary licenses because they understand children better.
Stephanie, your take on what elementary school teachers can teach secondary school teachers?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's character is built into our curriculum because these are tiny people that are, you know, growing up to be our next generation. So I think that it's important to see each kid as a person and to constantly revisit those character issues and the things that make people more human.
You know, one of the things I think about is I can remember the names of my elementary school teachers very, very clearly. But I've forgotten the names of many of my high school teachers. Mm-hmm. I guess that indicates just how important people like you, Stephanie Downs, really are.
Thank you.
Thanks for a job well done. I'm sure you're going to have a great day tomorrow. Marvin, thank you for being with us in 10 seconds. A final thought, but it has to be 10 seconds.
Think about the kids' point of view. Care about the kids. Think about the kids. Don't do it for you. Do it for them.
Good final thought. That's Marvin Berkowitz. Thank you so much for being with us from the University of Missouri, St. Louis. And Stephanie Downs, thank you for being with us. I also want to thank Annie Wayland and James Mueller for being with us in our recorded conversations. Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk to PBS President and CEO Paula Kerger. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.